Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming to our new venue. Can you hear me at the back there? That's all right, they always say that at all these presentations, don't they? So welcome to Go Ahead's half-year results for year ending 31st of December 2016. Really do appreciate you being here at our new venue. So our half-year results are in line with our expectations. Full-year expectations lowered due to challenges in GTR and a slowdown in passenger journeys numbers in regional bus. Regional bus operating profit up 6.2% to 25.7 million. Revenue growth was 0.8%, whilst passenger numbers reduced by 0.7%. But they were outperforming a subdued national trends. London Bus saw operating profit up 8.6% to 21.5 million. Revenue growth in bus, London Bus was 2.8%, while mileage was broadly flat. London Bus now includes Singapore, but this has a negligible impact on this period. Rail operating profit fell 35% to 26.9 million, and this is entirely owing to losses in GTR and known bid costs. Contribution to the DfT was at nearly 43 million. Lengthy and significant industrial relations issues at GTR, which I don't really need to say too much that you realise that. It's related to the modernisation of working practices required by the contract, and they have caused months of disrupted travel. We are working towards a resolution so that we can provide a reliable service for our customers. We're awaiting the outcome of bids in UK, German and Swedish rail, and Singaporean bus. Strong cash generation, robust balance sheet, and our stable bus profits support the interim dividend increase of 6.5%. And with that, I'd like to pass you over to Patrick, and then I'll come back and give some more colour to this, and also there's an opportunity for questions and answers. Thank you.
Oh, slightly unbalanced room. Good morning. This is my second results presentation for the Go Ahead Group and marks the end of my first year as Chief Financial Officer. As David said, overall the group has performed in line with our expectations over the first half of the financial year. Both bus divisions have shown improvement in difficult trading conditions, about which I will say a bit more later as we look into the details. In rail, the change is unsurprisingly dominated by the impact of the UK's largest and most complex rail franchise. A point just to remind you all is that as we announced late last year, we've changed the way that we account for pensions in rail. This has allowed us to simplify the presentation of our numbers by removing the need for adjusted financials. The two bus businesses remain the bedrock of the group's financial performance. And in regional bus, the fuel savings locked in as a result of our hedging program have delivered significant benefits in the half year. While like-for-like passenger volumes are down, there is a more varied picture across the different geographies in which we operate. This slowdown in passenger volumes, combined with a small number of high-value insurance claims, has caused us to lower our expectations for the full year. While in London, overall margins have held up in what remains a very competitive market. Revenue has grown and we've had a solid performance on Quicks in the half year. The impact of sustained investment in new buses as contracts are renewed can be seen in the higher depreciation charge. London has also seen an increase in insurance costs. As we're reporting the Singapore contract in this segment, the costs of bidding for further contract work are included in these numbers, as are the revenues for the first few months of operation in Singapore, some £15 million. The full year expectations for London have not changed, and for the two bus divisions combined, the full year profit expectations are broadly in line with last year. This chart on fuel hedging shows that the company remains committed to a disciplined program of fixing our fuel costs to provide the business with certainty. It's worth mentioning that all our hedges are undertaken in pound sterling, so we're not exposed to currency risk on the hedges. Turning to rail, before commenting on the individual companies, it's worth noting the increase in bid costs for the half year. This reflects principally the bid submitted for the West Midlands franchise, which is currently operated by London Midland, and also to note the bid costs for the full year, which include further bids in Germany and Scandinavia. Turning to the companies, London Midland is trading well. Its revenue is beating sector trends, and it is in profit share with the DfT. In Southeastern, the impact of the nationwide slowdown in revenue growth is reflected in these results, although in the half year, the impact of this is shielded by the profit share. The management team in Southeastern has taken cost management action to respond to this shortfall. In GTR, the results have been affected by the ongoing industrial action. This has caused increased costs as management act to try and improve services for customers. It has also delayed the implementation of planned cost improvement initiatives. These effects will continue for part of the rest of the year and are reflected in our reduced expectations for the full year in rail. However, in addition to lowering the expectations for rail, we've also, in response to comment and suggestions, described a range of possible outcomes. Now, this is all pretty complex. I'm going to go through it and hopefully try and bring some clarity to it. As we've explained before, the GTR contract was designed to allow for change. For example, this time a year ago, we explained that the contract had been varied to take account of the fact that there was less available track capacity than expected at the time that the contract was awarded. The circumstances continue to change as new trains are delivered and timetables are changed around changing infrastructure. In addition to that change, long-running industrial action has had significant impacts on the quality of train service provided to our customers. And while GTR has a measure of protection inside the contract against the financial impact of this industrial action. Now, all of these are the subject of contractual dialogue with the DfT. And as I've said in the past, there are essentially two stages to that contractual dialogue. The first is to agree that an event of change has happened, and then the second is to work up the detail of the numbers. Now, the principles of the variations are usually agreed pretty quickly. But because of the complexities and the interdependencies between the variations, that takes a little bit longer, and that means that there is a range of reasonably possible outcomes to those discussions. In respect of events up to the half-year end, our judgment is that this range is plus or minus 10 million around the reported numbers. Given the continuing uncertainty, our judgment is that this range will increase to plus or minus 15 million around the full-year profit expectations for rail. Turning to the longer term, just to remind you, this contract has three main drivers of profitability. Firstly, we must run a reliable service for customers. We must also agree with the DfT the costs of running longer and more trains on the expanded infrastructure. And finally, the program of cost improvements that was envisaged at the outset of the contract must be delivered. We and the management of GTR are working hard on all three of those issues, and we keep the long-term outlook on this contract under constant review. Now, I'm sure that notwithstanding that explanation, there will be one or two questions on this later, so I'm going to move on. This is the slide in which the results come together. I'm not going to highlight too much from it, just to remind you that the interim dividend has been increased by 6.5% in line with the increase in last year. Cash flow and capex. The business continues to generate strong positive cash flows underpinned by the bus business. This has allowed us to commit to an increased program of capital investment to support contract renewals in London, to protect and grow regional bus, and to deliver committed customer benefits in rail, such as new ticket machines. And of course, included in other is the small acquisition, Excelsior Coaches. The small acquisition, Excelsior Coaches, that we made in the half year. Now, adjusted net debt has grown. However, the net debt to EBITDA ratio remains below our target, and the business has ample headroom on its banking facilities. Turning finally to pensions, the assets and liabilities of the scheme have grown in the half year, but the post-tax deficit has increased by some £27 million as a result of a reduction in interest rates and an increase in inflation assumptions. Thank you very much for listening, and while I look forward to receiving your questions at the end, I will now hand back to David.
Thank you, Patrick. Let's get off that slide quickly. Whew, that's better. Right, I'll start off with regional bus. Operating profit up 6.2%. Margins remain stable and sector leading. Revenue growth and passenger volumes are subdued, but continue to outperform industry trends. And there are still some very clear geographical variations between the north and south. We've always said that revenue growth would plateau once we'd reached the £100 million target. And as a reminder, over the last 5 years, we've grown revenue by about 25%. We've got the highest customer satisfaction score in the sector at 89%. And we're continually striving to improve customer experience and attract new customers. So that will include a lot of technology investments, such as the introduction of PayPal across all our bus companies, on both the web and the app, and actually on our train companies as well. Introduction of contactless bank card payments, and we're starting that next month, and we're starting that in Oxford and North East. We've got Wi-Fi and audio-visual on all our new buses with USB sockets, Google Transit trip planners, we've got iBeacon trials, and I could go on. So we're doing a load of things to actually make sure that people are stay with us and are attracted to travelling by bus, as well as a continued investment in 91 new buses over the period. We additionally acquired two bolt-on acquisitions. One was Thamesdown Transport, which took place outside of the half year. That was an ex-municipal company, one of the last remaining 11 that we bought from Swindon Borough Council, and we're looking forward to rejuvenating that business. And the other one was, Patrick also alluded to, which was a small coach business in Bournemouth. Again, that's of good strategic importance for us, and we're managing that. And both of them are being managed through our Go South Coast subsidiary, as they do with other purchases we've made. The bus services bill remains on the parliamentary agenda, but I have to say the world has moved on. It was part of the previous administration's role in looking at the devolution agenda. It is an enabling bill, and which adds very little for buses, and everything that it makes possible is already possible through existing legislation. But, I'll be positive, if used wisely, it could give greater focus to the bus, and it could create more partnership working, and that can only be helpful in terms of helping to mitigate the effects of congestion. Turning now to London Bus. So we maintain good operating margins of 8.3%, and as we've already said, these results include the operations in Singapore, a very, very marginal effect in terms of these figures. The reason why they're in with the London team is because it's a very similar business model, and also because the London team actually manage the Singaporean business from a remote point of view. Revenue and mileage growth in line with expectations. We are the largest London bus operator with 24% of the market, and have maintained this position over a number of years, which is a tremendous feat in itself. High quality, cost efficient operator with consistent contract retention rates, and that leads to a large capital spend this year of 154 new buses. We are actually the first all-electric bus depot at Waterloo. We have the only full electric bus depot and the largest one in the whole of the UK, which has had loads of people coming to visit us. Strong Quicks performance in the first quarter, some settling down of the causes of congestion, such as the cycle superhighways, and it's hugely improved on the same period last year. Congestion, however, is a pervasive issue, both for London and regional bus. It is high on the Mayor's agenda. Recognition from the Mayor, TfL and the London Assembly that congestion will drive away bus passengers, which only makes congestion worse if they migrate to cars. There is a big imperative to solve this in order to balance their books, because obviously less passengers equals less revenue, and encourage people back to the most efficient mover of people on surface transport, which is the bus. And as I've said to you before, with population growth, most population growth does drive the bus usage. All the more important this takes place. We're working with TfL to help solve the issue. I've talked about Singapore. We began operating buses in Singapore in September 2016. We're very pleased with the performance. There's a really good transfer of skills from our London team to Singapore. As I've said, they're looking after Singapore. And we feel that we're meeting the LTA's aspirations for raising standards. Moving on to rail. Good results from South East and London Midland, both of which are in profit share with the DfT. GTR made losses in the period, and as a group, we still contributed nearly £43 million to the DfT. We remain focused on delivering the commitment of our existing franchises and improving service for customers, and there has been a whole host of initiatives around this. Just a word about the rail industry itself. There's no doubt that we've been going through a very challenging period, but the changes we are making are necessary if we want to modernise the railways and cater for rising demand. And they will be repeated across the UK. Inevitably, change creates difficulties and leads to some negative sentiment about the railways, and the whole industry is working really hard to overcome that. We still believe that franchising remains a viable business model to bid for. Individually, looking at South Eastern, the DfT have indicated that there will be an extension of 24 weeks of the South Eastern franchise to December 2018. Profit share is expected to reduce in the second half of the year due to decline in revenue trends, and a programme of cost control measures to mitigate this has already kicked off. We continue to work closely with industry partners to support the Thames Link programme, especially in terms of the London Bridge works. Our customer satisfaction is improving. It's the best it's been for 3 years. We hope that's going to continue. The direct award that we're currently operating has been all about the focus on the customer experience. And that's from toilets on trains to station refurbishment and reliability of the trains. And we launched the Key, which is a smart, flexible ticket product which provides more convenience for all season ticket holders. We did that in last December, and we've had 16,000 already take up on that ticket. Looking at London Midland, we expect to remain in profit share for the life of the franchise, which ends in October 2017. Reliable service, punctuality scores of 88%. High customer satisfaction at 85%, which is both of those figures are above the sector average. We've had loads of staff engagement, and we've been awarded the Gold Award in Investor in People. Recently also named the most improved organisation in the latest UK Customer Satisfaction Index. And we think London Midland has been a turnaround business. It's provided better performance, better customer satisfaction, and better returns than 3 years ago, and we're proud of what we've achieved there. And we're awaiting now the outcome of the West Midlands franchise competition, which we'll most probably hear in June of this year. And now turning to the next turnaround story, which is GTR. We're playing a key role in the Thames Link programme, which will transform the travelling experience of millions of people. It may not feel like it at the moment, but that is where we will get to. Since the franchise began, 428 new carriages introduced, more than the rest of the UK rail industry put together over the last 2 years. 970 more to be delivered by the end of 2018. That is a huge number of vehicles to come in. It's unheard of in terms of the numbers in any franchise that's ever existed so far. And that's £400 million of new rolling stock already delivered. We've opened two of the largest depots in the UK at Three Bridges and Hornsey. It's gone under the radar. They're working efficiently. We've invested in the UK's largest ever driver training and recruitment programme. And when I say ever, by a country mile. There's more people in our school, 250 people being trained at the moment, and 170 people have gone out as new train drivers over the last couple of years. Since the back end of last year, we recruited another additional 100 on-board supervisors to help with our trains and help with customer service. We're the first train operator to offer delay repay for all journeys above 15 minutes. And driver-controlled trains now provide three-quarters of the service, up from 40% last August, and with on-board supervisors assisting passengers. And this is only one of the 295 contractual commitments that we've delivered on since the start of this contract. There's been a lot of change, there's been a lot of things going on, And we really hope that we're going to see that transform itself into the service for passengers. We're striving for a full resolution of industrial relations issues so we can deliver a reliable service for customers. And a reminder, actually, that we shouldn't forget that we actually had industrial relations problems on this track all the way from April last year. We're only at this moment in time, the last few weeks, have we actually managed to run the system without industrial relations issues. Looking to international developments, we submitted another bid for a bus contract in Singapore, and we expect those results in the second half. We've established a Nordic bid team in Sweden, where we've been shortlisted for a place called Patatogen. May not be pronounced exactly right. Results expected in June, and we are pre-qualified in Norway for rail contracts. A German rail bids, we're due for more submission of rail bids in the spring, and we're awaiting the outcome of another bid. We've mobilised the German rail contract in Baden-Württemberg. That's well underway, and last week we were really pleased to exchange contracts on a new site that we're building for a new depot just outside Stuttgart. Bus and rail development teams are exploring other opportunities in targeted markets. Rail continues to be attractive internationally, where there are low bid costs, no revenue risks, the procurement system is transparent and understood, and where we think we can add value from our UK experience and knowledge. To turn into our summary and outlook, stable financial performance in bus, although regional bus growth impacted by industry-wide slowdown in passenger journeys, so therefore a lowering of our full expectations. Full-year rail division profitability impacted by GTR, where additional costs have been incurred and cost efficiencies have been delayed due to the ongoing issues. Contractual discussions are ongoing with the DfT regarding GTR, the range of reasonably possible outcomes. Our judgment of those outcomes is that the impact on rail profitability will be within a range of plus to minus 15 million for the full year. Our international development is progressing well, good growth opportunities in targeted markets, and despite the challenges, our bus and rail businesses remain fundamentally strong. We're committed to protecting our core business and delivering value. Stable bus profits support interim dividend increase of 6.5%, reflecting the board's confidence. And, as always, the group's in a good financial position, strong cash generation and a robust balance sheet. So, thank you very much, and we're ready to take questions.
Wow. Good morning.
Damien Burrough from RBC. Can I ask questions about three areas, please? First of all, on the bus side, and particularly we've highlighted Oxford and North East. In Oxford, what is the issue there? Can you elaborate a little bit more on it? Is it in the local bus operations and roadworks, or also on the longer distance stuff into London? And could you give us a feeling of sort of what the weighting of each there is? Secondly, on rail, I guess we might as well just tick off the GTR one. Could you give us an update on sort of where you think you are with the unions within that business? And then secondly, within that, what the kind of sort of profit and cash flow outlook you see for that business now for the remainder of the franchise? And then very finally on Sweden, the thing you mentioned you pre-qualified for, I think, in Scania in southern Sweden. Could you give us an idea of the understanding of sort of the revenue and the sort of labour cost risk that might involve, or is that just not clear at this stage? Thank you.
I'm pretty sure there were four questions, but that's okay. I'll ask you to do the profit one, and then I'll go through the others. In terms of bus, Oxford has had a unique combination of events that's hit it. One has been congestion as a consequence of a rolling programme of highway infrastructure improvements that have taken place around the city centre. I can't criticise the County Council. It will eventually end up with a better road network. That's fine, but obviously as you go through it, we actually lose customers if there's no reliability of the buses. But it's a rolling programme, so it comes in and out, so to speak. Secondly, it exemplifies the whole issue about having vibrant high streets. Oxford is an attractive city, but at the moment, it's rebuilding or building a huge complex of Westgate Centre, which isn't due to open until October of this year. And of course, therefore, the retail attraction in the centre of Oxford is not as good as if you went to, dare I say, Milton Keynes or somewhere else. So it takes people away from going to the centre of the city. That will come back because there will be a big new attraction in the middle of Oxford, and therefore we hope that we'll benefit from that. And thirdly, you're quite right to say, you know, ask for the detail of where it comes in terms of longer distance. What we have on the longer distance, which we've always had, it's got to be one of the most hotly contested corridors coming into London between coach operators has ever existed. It's between us and Stagecoach. And that competition's always been there. And there's always been competition from the rail. But the rail now, because of the opening of the Chiltern line at Oxford Parkway, what you're finding now is there's competition between Great Western and Chiltern over traffic going into London. We've experienced far more congestion in the centre of London, creating liability in some of our coaches. So it's certainly hotted up the competition issue on long-distance coaching. Used to be between coach operators, now we have train operators as well. We just have to work harder, we have to make our offer better, we have to create more reliability. So it's not in any shape or form a disaster, but certainly there is more competition in Oxford from that point of view. In terms of rail and the trade unions, obviously you've got to respect the fact that I'm not going to say too much in this room because I don't want to do anything that would undermine any of those negotiations. We did reach an agreement with ASLEF's executive over a way forward for the issues of driver-controlled trains. Unfortunately, that wasn't accepted by their members, and we're working with ASLEF. Both parties want to find a resolution, and we're trying to work our way through that. With RMT, we also want to find a resolution, and we also want to work with them to find a way through, and our door's open for that. We did have a strike last week from RMT, where we still managed to run 9 out of 10 trains. So I'm pretty sure that RMT will take their dispute over the issue of controlling doors to other parts of the country. We just happen to be the first in this line of modernisation of driver practices. But at the moment, I really wouldn't be right for me to talk in any great detail about negotiations. And in terms of Sweden, it's about 500 million in terms of the turnover. We are very clear about where the labour issues are, so I'm not concerned about that as a risk. We've gone through that in some detail. We're very clear about the type of contract we're bidding for, what the risk factors of that contract are. So it's pretty normal in terms of our experience of bidding for rail franchises. And I'll ask Patrick just to talk about profits.
So on GTR, what Aaron managed about in the presentation was that there are three things that drive profit on the contract: reliable train services, getting the variations agreed as the service ramps up towards Thames Link, and taking cost out. We've put a range around this year. Change will continue until the Thames Link services are fully ramped up, which is December 2018. And what we'd previously guided was that this year and next year we're going to be kind of somewhere around break even, and that then over the life of the contract we hope to make something around 1.5%. We keep that under constant review. We don't have a better estimate than that at the moment. There is a range of possible outcomes, and 1.5% is in that range. As we refine things, we become clearer. Depending on how much longer the disruption goes on for, we will do our best to keep you updated with our latest view.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, good morning. It's Rashika from Barclays. I had two questions, one on bus and one on rail. On bus, when you last reported and gave us the pre-close update at the end of last year, you actually seemed quite relaxed about expectations. So can you maybe just talk through what's happened in the last kind of couple of months and why you suddenly become more cautious in your bus guidance? And then the second one on rail, can you just let us know how far into the contingent loan you are now with GTR? Thank you.
In terms of bus, there's two main reasons, actually, you could put three. I've just explained what's happening in Oxford. Oxford is actually the biggest mover in terms of our expectations of what's happening in Oxford, and there's been a combination of issues there that I've just described. There has been a slowdown of passenger numbers across the whole of the industry, across the whole of the UK. It is not consistent, so there are good pockets that we operate in where it's not exactly the same, but the north has been a continual trend. You could actually say, some of my bus people say, well, there's been a continual trend since 1958, actually. We just happened to have bucked it for the last 5 years and got passenger growth and revenue growth, as I explained at the beginning, revenue growth of 25%. But we certainly experienced some of that a slowing down in terms of passenger numbers, but not as bad as some of other people in the industry. It's 0.7% down. And so that's why we're less confident about the outlook, and we've revised some of that. Rael?
On the contingent loan, we put, and I can't remember the exact number, we put some capital into GTR when we got going, as expected. We have not yet had any drawdown requests further than that. And if I'm not sure if we've disclosed that number before, but I'm sure Holly can help you.
I should actually, just to be completely comprehensive, there's another issue that's happened in bus, which again is in Oxford. So Oxford is difficult for us at the moment. Has been a one-off, a big accident, and you'll get these occasionally, but it's a big hit, and that's also come in this year. Not to be repeated.
Morning, Gerald Koo from Liberum. Can I start with bus? You mentioned CapEx in London Bus. What's your view in terms of on versus off balance sheet investment? And in particular, where does the residual value risk sit with regard to electric vehicles and also new route masters? I think the latter are not yours, but if you could confirm that. And maybe more widely on GTR, you talked about how there's still a lot more to be done. In terms of operational execution, I think I sense that the two issues are introducing the remainder of the trains and ramping up to 24 trains per hour in the central core. What are the remaining risks in association with those two issues? How are you mitigating them? And you know, what should we be thinking about as, you know, as the main risk factors?
Okay. Good.
Yeah, so on the first one, generally, when there is what would be in the bus world described as new technology, which would be the new route masters and electric buses, we tend to lease those and leave the residual value risk, particularly because of the experience with bendy buses, with the leasing company. I can't tell you definitively whether we have leased all the electric vehicles and all the new route masters, but certainly the vast majority of them will be leased, and I'm happy to confirm that afterwards.
The detail of the route masters is that they actually have been purchased by Transport for London, and therefore there is absolutely zero residual risk, and that was a smart one-off move by TfL and the right thing to do. Who originated the idea? Okay. On the GTR, sorry, you finished?
Yeah.
On GTR, yet there is the issue of how we ramp up to 24 trains an hour through the core of the network for everyone. That's really where we've been trying to get to as when Thameslink was originally initiated, was how do you get to 24 trains an hour through the core of the rail network. And that's in the peak. We're going through a lot of discussions at the moment to make sure that we're doing all the things that we need to do in terms of training staff ready for automatic train operation, because it'd be the first place on national rail network where there'll be automatic train operation, because that's the only way you can get that number of trains through that core section. You can't do it on a manual operation or driver operation. You've got to do it automatically. So there are risks around that, actually, but this is where the Thameslink programme was set up to deliver, which is where there are issues about the train operator, there are issues about the train manufacturer, and there are issues of the infrastructure provider, and we have to work very closely together to make sure we're all delivering our part of that contract. and that we've got the same objectives. Now, certainly it would be true that we haven't always been aligned in the past over some of those objectives. We need to get aligned, and we need to get DfT fully understanding where those risks lie. There's no question of that, and we need to be able to deliver our part of that. And in terms of mitigating them, it is about making sure you've got the driver training program in place, that we understand all the different technical issues, and some of it really is down in the weeds, and I'd love to explain to the group here, but I think it may take another half hour, explaining where the geofencing of some of this all works as well. So we understand all the risks, we're working together as a partnership, there's a big alliance project. We've got more oversight on that project than we've had before through the Chris Gibb review. He's now involved in oversight. Chris Green, ex of Southeast Trains from many years ago, is also doing oversight. Everybody is focused on how do you deliver the Thames Link programme. We've been distracted by industrial relations, there's no doubt about that, and now we need to make sure it's all about the Thames Link programme.
Morning, it's Joe Thomas from HSBC. Just going back to the bus downgrade that you're putting through, I am somewhat surprised at at how it seems to have fallen off very quickly since December. I don't think you've given any data points today as to sort of passenger numbers or revenue growth numbers in the early part of this year, but could you perhaps give us a sense of exactly what is going on those KPIs? Second thing, again on bus, you talked about an insurance cost issue. Is that just a one-off thing that hits you this year and recovers next year, or do we keep that in numbers? And then the third thing, again on bus, you're making the two acquisitions, or have made two acquisitions. What will be their profit contribution this year, and what will it be in a full year, please?
Okay. In terms of profit contribution, you shouldn't be putting... We don't know at this moment in time. We've only just taken them over. Excelsior is a very small business. It's more about the strategic benefits it brings us in terms of the business in Bournemouth. You shouldn't need to add more figures into your spreadsheets as a consequence of these two acquisitions for this year. The Thames Down, we're really quite excited that we actually should get hold of a municipal bus company. It means there's good processes in place, but it also means there's loads of opportunity for us to actually rejuvenate that business. So we've got a lot of CapEx going in. We're changing things very rapidly. We've just moved away from cash-only exact fare, which is a nonsense for passengers. We're going to go to contactless. So we've got a load of investment that we're doing up front because we know that we're going to end up doing that anyway, so let's get it in up front. We've actually got some good rivalry with Stagecoach, who have now gone and registered some work in Swindon, which is interesting. So at the moment, it's transforming that business, and then we'll wait and see what happens to the profit results as a consequence. In terms of the insurance, that is a one-off. No two ways about it. We don't get the sort of incident we had, which is quite high profile, that regularly, and we've had two of them in Oxford. So it is a one-off. And in terms of data points, that is a good question. We review on a weekly, monthly basis what's happening on revenue. Sometimes it's about where the Christmas falls. Sometimes it's about the number of shopping days over Christmas. Sometimes it's about trends that are taking place. We're mirroring what may be happening in retail, where they get more spend before or get less spend before and more spend afterwards. So it's a lot of it is linked in with the retail over the Christmas period. We certainly came into our pre-close without thinking that there was any passenger numbers going down. We're hopeful that they will come back. We think we're doing all the right things. We've done all these things in the past. We've had blips in the past, and we've recovered pretty well. As I said, we had a 25% growth over the last 5 years. We think we're doing all the right things. We think we know our markets. We think the markets are the right ones, and we think some of that will come back. What we worry about, because we listen to what our peers are saying and we listen to what industry observers say, is there some structural change taking place in terms of bus passengers? And the structural change will be linked entirely to what's happening on retail propositions in terms of goods to people rather than people to goods, and what's happening with congestion, because all of that is featured quite highly across the papers at the moment about congestion, both in London and outside of London, worse places in the UK than anywhere else. I can't think what the analogy was, but it's, you know, London's worse than anywhere in the world, I think, at the moment for congestion. And we need to understand whether those are structural changes or mere blips along the way. We're doing everything possible to get the passenger numbers back. Next year.
Morning, it's Alex Patterson from Investec. Could you, if I'll just ask a few questions, I won't bother to quantify them. Just on the rail side, well, we were just talking about sort of passenger growth in bus. In rail, growth is also slowing. I don't know if you could say why you think that is, and also what you think the capacity utilisation is on your rail franchises at sort of peak times. Is there still scope to grow there, or are they pretty full? Secondly, you know, you're bidding on West Midlands. Do you think, or are you considering kind of growing your rail footprint in the UK, or is it about sort of holding it as it is? And then in the long term, you know, clearly you're bidding on rail franchises and bus internationally. Do you really think that the growth in the number of franchises in the growth will come through international, or is it sort of keeping, you know, more diversification by expanding internationally?
Okay, good. I'll make that 1, 2, 3, 4. in terms of rail, we have a number of KPI data points of looking at what's happening to revenue. We go into absolute infinite detail about what's happening on numbers, and it is slowing, but nobody at this moment in time can put their finger on the reason why. Southeastern is the area where it's affected, actually, at this moment in time. If you ask me that without the data, I would immediately say it's all to do with central London employment. That's what I would say. But actually, when you look at the data, it doesn't shine through. It doesn't show that there's been a reduction in central London employment indices. There may be a lag effect of some of that, but there is no data at the moment that clearly identifies why there should be any slowdown in the number of passengers on rail. So I don't know, is the straight answer. We're looking at it closely. It's not unique for Southeastern, but actually London Midland is not experiencing the same. So there may be regional variations of some of that. But we look at it so closely with so much data points that nothing is illuminated. In terms of capacity utilisation, I mean, as a case in point, in Southeastern, they have particular lines which are over capacity and a criteria that's used by the DfT. We're working with the DfT at this precise moment in time to come up with a solution that enables some rolling stock to transfer from the sister company GTR into Southeastern. We're trying to see how we can resolve those capacity issues, which are quite unique on some of the lines. So there are capacity issues, there's no question of that. One of the issues always we have about promoting the railways to get more people on them is, of course, actually in the morning peaks, there isn't the capacity for them. A lot of what we're trying to do is off-peak and multi-directional type travel. In terms of West Midlands, we're certainly bidding. That's our next priority in terms of the bid. After that, we're also going to be bidding for Southeastern. So there's a lot of activity going on. We take each TOC as it comes along, and we say to ourselves, is this one that we think we can add value to, that we understand, that meets our criteria? We then work out whether we'll be bidding on our own or with somebody else. So each TOC is looked at in its unique circumstances, and they will come up when they come up, so to speak. And international, what I remember saying before, what we're looking at for rail in Germany, some of those bid costs actually include the cost of running the team in Germany, not just the bidding for contracts. And until we get to 2019, when the contracts start, they don't actually feed themselves. So what we want is the profits from rail to feed themselves to actually then carry on bidding for more rail, and so we get complete organic growth. So it'll be a few years before we get some of those profits repatriated back into the UK, because it's going to pay for the cost we've got at the moment and the cost for bidding for more operations. We do see some advantages in terms of rail franchises or rail contracts, I should say, in Europe, because they're low cost to bid for, they come up with regularity, you've got this drumbeat going on, there's not the edge of the cliff type issues, and also they're very long term, so they're sometimes 13, 15 years. So you bid for them and then you've got a revenue stream for quite a long period of time on less risk profile contracts. So certainly there are some certain advantages to them. You still need to understand the local market, which is why we set up indigenous bidding teams in Germany and Sweden at this moment in time. All of that comes with a cost, but you've got to spend this money to accumulate at some point or other. Thank you.
Morning, Jay Spooner from Jefferies. I think the bond refinances at some point over the course of this year. Can you just talk a little bit about the preparation for that refinancing and I guess the opportunity given where interest rates are nowadays, and also in terms of the CapEx profile this year, there's obviously quite a high year for CapEx, but as we move out of this year, can you just give us an update on how you see that profile developing?
Okay.
Thanks.
So on the bond, we've been watching it coming towards us for some time. Just before the full year, we entered into a bridge facility with a syndicate of banks, which relieved us of timing pressure. The key judgment really is when is a good time. We don't like to speculate and try and call interest rate markets. So it seems to us that we've got the half year results out the way. The next 3 or 4 months is a good time to get that process underway. We've appointed advisors. We're starting to talk to banks about who's going to be the book runner and who's going to do what. We've got presentations during March, and we would hope to get it done before the end of the year, before the end of the financial year. But we're not going to be rushed on timing by any particular deadline. We will do it when it's right. But we're in reasonable shape, as you say. Rates are low. You can benchmark yourselves and work out what you think we're going to be paying. But it should be a little bit less than we're paying at the moment. So that should be earnings accretive into 17-18. And the second question.
CapEx profile,
sorry. So this year is particularly high because of the peak in London buses. That continues into next year and then tails back down to more normal levels. So I think a replacement rate is probably 10% above the depreciation charge is kind of the right sort of zone to be in. And then rail capex is determined much more by the commitments in the franchises. So if we were to win the West Midlands contract, then we would have a new profile of capex coming from that. Okay. Just close it down.
Any further questions?
But Damien's always got the last one.
That'd be five.
Damien Barr, obviously, can I ask just two follow-ups? First of all, on you mentioned the geographical variance in UK bus. Can you give us a little bit more detail about what that variance looks like and beyond Oxford, for example, Brighton, others, how they're performing? And then secondly, on London Midland, if you don't retain that in October, can you give us an update on what you think, under current conditions, that does to your balance sheet in terms of cash flows and any equity requirements you'd be relieved of? Thank you.
Okay. The geographical variations are the same as I've always said, which is in the northeast, it's a static population, if not declining population growth. They've also got the congestion. They've also got the issues of footfall in some of their retail establishments. So the northeast is still an issue for us in terms of declining passenger numbers, and it's a very competitive market. And if you go around the rest of our business, actually, it's okay. Brighton is good, Go South Coast is good, Plymouth is good. And then you get to Oxford is not so good. So I think the only additional location, really, is Oxford in terms of some of those numbers. The rest are holding their own.
Okay, London Midland. The answering the second half of the question first, the bonds are $40 million. So those are what we'll get removed from our balance sheet in that sense if we don't win it. In terms of cash flow, it'll be much less significant than other contracts because London Midland is in a direct award contract, so it's been going for a much shorter period of time. So we've essentially cleaned out the balance sheet from the original franchise, and we've only got the much shorter direct award contract. So there will be some cash coming back, but it'll be less than $10 million. Yeah, so not significant. Yeah, that'll kind of wash out with the usual provision releases and things, but they're much. It's much smaller.
You can't have a seventh, Damien. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate your attending today, and thank you very much for the really good questions. Thank you.